Welcome back to another edition of the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 podcast. Happy, very happy to be back in the saddle with my guys, Kyle Devitt, who is up north. And actually, I'm getting to look in those beautiful blue eyes right now because we have him on Google Duo. Shout out to Tommy Lyons for hooking that up. And as always, the man, the myth, the legend, Dan Kaplan here in the office. And we've got a lot to dive into from a really exciting weekend. The North really kind of got to started going. So excited to dive into some of these Northern battles as our Northern fans have been waiting and waiting. So kind of to set the table, fellas, how did you consume your games this weekend? How were your weekends?
Awesome. Awesome weekend. Tons of games. A lot to catch up to. I got to go to the York-Stevenson game, which...
That sucks.
Yeah, it didn't turn out how obviously I would have wanted, but it was still a good time seeing lots of good people, so...
Yeah, man, I had fun. Lots of different TVs and computers going. I'm glad I invested in some more machines to watch more games on, so...
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I learned this weekend that if you want to text... I texted Dan when I saw the score of the York-Stevenson game. I was like, dude, what happened? And I realized I shouldn't have texted him because he sent me like 14 lines of the most like in-depth analysis of that game. And I was like, well, I'm driving on the Jersey Turnpike right now. All I really want to know was like, hey, this happened and that happened. But we'll dive into that game in a few minutes here. So like always, we will do a quick weekend recap of three or four games, hit on a couple others. Got an interesting Wednesday slate and then another big weekend for the Division III fans. So let's start with Dickinson 13, Stevens 12. Dan, you want to give this one a start?
Yeah, sure. The first thing I have to say about this game is my favorite lacrosse player of all time played in it. His name is Nico Eipiker, and he is like my spirit animal plus a few biscuits. Like, he is awesome. He's awesome. He catches everything. I don't remember what he finished with, whether it was five or six, but he scores a ton inside, and he catches everything. He's awesome. He's awesome. He was super fun.
Kyle, did you get eyes on this?
I didn't, but what does plus biscuits mean? I don't know what that means.
I'm not super fleet of foot, but I think I would have been a little more fleet of foot than he was. He's a little bit chunkier than I am, but I loved his game. He just did a really good job working inside, and he gave a good target for Gebhardt and the rest of the feeders on that team. They did a really good job fighting back in that game. Dickinson in the first half is kind of asserting the fact that they're bigger, stronger, faster. And then at halftime, that Stevens team just decided, like, all right, we're done getting bullied here. We're done letting them just push us off the ball and win all the 50-50s. And from there, it was, you know, a really good game. They battled back. They score with 12 seconds left. To send it to overtime. Really exciting. Really, really just like as back and forth of a game as you can get. And in overtime, Dickinson ended up being able to make a play in the middle of the field that stripped the ball and gained possession. And then from there, they went down, cleared it, called timeout, and then had like probably four shot clock resets before they were able to finally put it in. But it was a really exciting game to watch.
We talked about Dickinson being like super young. So I feel like with a win over St. Mary's and then over a good Stevens Tech team, those are like pretty good wins to continue to build confidence for that younger group. And with, you know, Ursinus having some more big games coming up, F&M taking a step back, you know, Dickinson could be a team that we weren't as familiar with in terms of some of the like high level names that could end up being competing for Centennial Conference Championship.
Yeah, last time on here I talked about how much they lost, but man, it doesn't seem like they missed a beat. Coach Webby, my guy, he's got those guys rolling right now. It's fun to watch.
I love it. It's a good time to be a Red Devil. As we move forward, and also with Gettysburg losing to Salisbury, which I know we're going to dive into in a game or two here. But as we continue to roll on, Dan, you know we had to get to it eventually. Stevenson York. To start, Kyle, did you see this game at all?
No, but I knew who won because Jacob Tatum followed me immediately after the game ended.
Ooh, there you go. Shout out, Jacob Tatum. So I'm going to let Dan take this one. You know, again, Stevenson 12, York 11. We talked about... you know, previewing that Stevenson was more of an undisciplined team, York more disciplined, but York still trying to fill some holes, kind of find their identity. I did not expect the score when I saw it. I was a little bit shocked. I thought it was going to be, I think York has really beaten up on Stevenson over the past few years. So, Dan, why don't you give us, wipe away the tears and let us know how this went down.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had to give them credit, right? Like, last time we came on here, we talked about how they were, you know, not super disciplined and missing some pieces and not super complete on the defensive side of the ball. And man, Like, they won this game, and I know I'm going to hurt some feelings here, but they won this game because they were more disciplined, right? And, you know, I'm not saying anything that you can't tell from watching the game. I'm not saying anything that's, you know, wild or crazy, right? Like, Stevenson scored on 5 of their 6 man-up opportunities, and they held the ball on 2 occasions to waste clock and really make sure that they got the best look, and the York never got a shot back at it after, right? And so a couple different instances, they were, you know, the more disciplined team, and it ended up helping them out in the end.
Yeah, and Stevenson's schedule doesn't get any harder. I mean, I'm sorry, any easier. They have a really crazy slate. I was texting my brother, who was also a Lynchburg alum this week, and he was like, I think Stevenson might go 0-7 after losing Ursinus and now York. So it's really good to see them continue to battle back and find some offense elsewhere and get a big win. This is a huge confidence booster for the Mustangs. As like I said, they have another six massive games coming up.
Right. Yeah. And then the other thing that's really important to remember in this game is losing Danny O'Connell for York so early just created a domino effect of issues, whether it was possessions on the wings or possessions in the defensive end. Just, he's so sure-handed on ground balls and then on cover as well. Like, when you have a short stick D-middy that you just never have to worry about sliding to, it can change your entire landscape of your defense. And then when you suddenly lose him in the first quarter and now you're trying to, like, battle back and put things together and, you know, trying to adjust without him, you know, it gets a lot more difficult.
Yeah, another huge game. Let's move on to Salisbury-Gettysburg. This was a 10-10 game last year, just full of highlights. Gettysburg has been one of those teams that's been knocking and knocking on the door. Coach Shanzik is a legendary coach. He's been there forever. And this game, you know, didn't really exactly live up to the bill. Kyle, what did you see? You know, we talk about Salisbury a lot. This was Gettysburg's first loss in the season after playing a couple, you know, easier teams. What did you see out of this game?
I mean, I thought the game was over early into the second quarter. Every facet, Scott McMillan was under siege in net for Gettysburg. You know, the thing that strikes you about Salisbury is their first six in offense. I don't think there's a better, more talented group in all Division III. I really believe that. Like, and I haven't seen a ton of the NESCAC teams play yet, and that sounds probably crazy coming from my mouth, of course, but I don't know if there are, again, 6 guys you can roll out that are better than, you know, Maroney, Bromwell, Melton, Wongus, all these guys, Nestor, they all had great games. Like, it was crazy. Everybody, like, and if you look at the scoreline, it's like, oh, well, they only had this guy had 1 goal, this guy had another goal. They didn't need 20 goals to win. So they didn't score 20 goals. They scored 11, which you're like, oh, it's an underperformance. It was not. Honestly, it was a rough game to watch if you were a Gettysburg fan. But what made it better was the commentator. And I tweeted about this weekend. Tweet, like, blew up. I had no idea. My whole thing with calling games is hard. I have called games. It is not an easy thing to do. And Gettysburg rolled out a guy with serious energy to call this game. So I had to dive a little deeper, find out who he was. Apparently, his name is Luke Smith. He's a 2018 graduate. Came to Gettysburg to play football, got hurt, and then started calling football and basketball games his senior year. He works for an oil company in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, and he only came down to call the game because the rest of the Gettysburg athletic staff was, like, jammed up with other games on campus. He'd only called a few lacrosse games before this, and listen, he made mistakes, but he owned them. You know what I mean? Like, he was trying to figure it out with the person watching the game, and if you're, like, an elitist snob, you're like, ugh, come on. Like, you know what that call is. Like, be that person. I choose not to be that person. Like, I would rather get good information and someone that tries and puts information out instead of, like, oh, I don't know, another game that happened this weekend that I watched where a bunch of homers were calling it, 3 people, stuff was crashing in the background, and they're groaning after passes. Like, grow up. Like, you want D3 to grow, to, like, grow and be this great thing? Like, put some effort into your stream, honestly. Puts them out, like, I'm serious. I can hear you chuckling, and I see, Dan, you're drinking out of a Lynchburg mug. I don't know if I can trust you anymore. Like, listen, this is crazy. that it has to take someone to outside of the sport to come in and put all this energy in when there's all these people that love the game and want to contribute. Like, listen, I'll go call your game. Of the Wheelock, give me a call. You know what I mean? Like, I'll call a detail. I will do anything for a very small amount of money. Honestly, like it you need to invest in that to grow things. Like, obviously your program wins and losses are what you're judged by sometimes. And a lot of D2 and D3 jobs are a lot of administrative duties as well. But like, if you actually want people to tune into streams, you need to put the resources into the stream. The Cabrini-Lynchburg game didn't even have anyone talking, and the scoreline was a camera zooming up to the thing and then zooming back and then zooming up and then zooming out to the other side. It was like wild, crazy angles. Like, I was like living in a spaceship watching the game. Like, put some effort into everything you do and you'll get a return. You get a return. You get a shout out on the podcast. Even though your team got waxed, shout out on the podcast. Like, good job. Keep doing a good job. That's all you have to do. Wow. First rant of the season. I feel
Kyle,
good.
Devitt, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. No, I'm with you. And it's interesting. When it comes to this game, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about this game is I don't think Gettysburg is – I think they deserve a little more credit than maybe they're getting right now. They just absolutely came out flat. They were outshot in the first quarter 15-0. They won one faceoff, and they had 6 turnovers all in the first quarter. Right, they go down 5-0, and the rest of the game is like a 6-5 game. So while, like, you know, bird's eye view, that's fine for me looking at the box score and whatnot. But I think that there is, you know, more to Gettysburg, and they're going to be just fine. I think Salisbury is a team that can really take you out of your rhythm, and it's hard to build confidence against them, especially when they're winning so many faceoffs. But I do think that Gettysburg is going to be more than fine. They're going to continue to contend in the Centennial. And the Bolts will be just fine. So I think they really just had one bad quarter, and we would have been talking about them in a different light if they didn't have that first bad 15-12 minutes.
Yeah, they just struggled to – like, I came on here last time. Again, I got to go back on something I said last time, but I thought that they were going to be able to generate a step on the short sticks, and it just never really came to fruition. They started to do a bit of a better job of it once they moved the offense. At first, they were like – initiating over in the wing where they weren't in any dangerous spots. So the pick may have been effective, but when they came off of it, they weren't in anywhere, any type of dangerous space to either shoot or in a spot where Salisbury had to slot. But eventually they moved to X and started initiating on those like lower spots where you're closer to the goal. So if you get your hands free, all you have to do from that close is really put it on cage and make the goal and make a good one. And that's when things started to get a little bit better and they got to initiate a little bit more offense, but they only got 13 shots on cage in the entire game, which one of the key ingredients to beating Salisbury is getting a ton of shots on cage and making those goalies make some good ones.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of scoring goals, the last kind of weekend game I want to recap is Lynchburg-Cabrini, probably the game of the weekend, Cabrini 17, the national champs, Lynchburg 15. It was an incredible game. I believe this game was tied at 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 at different times throughout the game. Dan and I were watching some highlights of it in the office yesterday, just kind of chowing down on some lunch and talking through some of it. Mike Gilbert was in there as well. Just a lot of D3 talk in the conference room, which is pretty cool. And Cabrini just had an answer every time. Lynchburg just could never really pull away. The faceoffs were much more even than I thought they were going to be. I know the Cabrini kid is probably the only one. Cabrini is a team that I think, even though they've lost Krug and kind of people I feel like are like, no, they're not a contender, I really think that they are contender to repeat as national champs. They just do so many things right. And Lynchburg just couldn't get over that hump. It was cool to see some new names in the Lynchburg box score. Nate Schaefer, lefty attackman, number 47, the sophomore. This kid gives me nightmares. So I've mentioned on this podcast before that this is my fifth year as the head coach of the Park School and in Baltimore, Maryland, MIAB conference. And Mr. Schaefer was he went to St. Peter and Paul, which is in our conference, and just he was absolutely unstoppable. Just would pull the ball from 2 steps inside the restraining line. He's a lefty, shifty attackman, but he can shoot the crap out of the ball. So it's good to see him get 4 or 5 goals. Another name to see in the box score for Lynchburg. But Cabrini just had an answer at every single turn. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, Kyle mentioned the offense for Salisbury being a group of guys that is pretty dangerous at any given time if they had rolled their top six out there, and I agree. But I think what the difference is that Salisbury is good because they work so well together, and it's a bunch of guys that have been around and have been playing together for years now, so they have a really good understanding for each other, whereas Cabrini has the best offense potentially in the country because every single person on their team can go by their guy and score at any given time. So if you're on defense, you have to be on your toes. You have to be ready to help. Your off-ball posture has to be great because in the snap, you may have to help and you may have to slide to something that you weren't expecting to. They just are super dynamic on that side of the ball. And they shift around. Like they, sometimes they have guys that'll come out and play a game at attack, and then the next game he's playing midfield, and like they're all comfortable with pulls. They're all comfortable initiating on short sticks. Like that group on offense is just really, really good. And then Lynchburg, man, like I feel like I may be coming a dead horse about this, but Kevin Rogers, man, like
5-2.
And I've watched maybe 100 Division III games this year, and I feel like he's probably the best single player, biggest difference maker for any team in the country right now. Obviously, that may change with the NESCAC schools and some of those North schools, you know, playing more games here. But right now, if I had to pick a player of the year, it's Kevin Rogers, no doubt.
Yeah, it's good to see some other names in the box score. Like I said, Nate Schaefer, four goals, zero assists. Colin Dean with 2-2. Brett Rogers, 1-3. Trammell Robinson, who kind of had a big game a few weeks ago, got in there as well. I thought Noah Bedwell played pretty well. He made 11 saves. He gave up 17 goals, but I think he did a pretty good job in there. And that's the names that you're used to hearing for Cabrini. Tyler Kostak, Mike Gerzebeck. You mentioned Cole Wesner being a Penn State commit at one time and coming in. He did his thing with four goals for the Cavaliers as well. So it's weird. They do a really good job of while they have these playmakers all over the place, they still are able to be balanced with three different guys scoring four goals, another with three, seven or eight guys in the box there. Two different goalies. Interesting.
Yeah, they lost Riley White after last year. He's probably the bigger loss between him and Krug. Like Krug obviously was great, but he came on really strong at the end of the year, and in terms of replacing a position, it's much easier to replace a left-handed attackman, especially when you get a Penn State to just fall in your lap. But replacing that goalie, and he was more than just their starting goalie. He was their guy. He was the captain, I think. I could be wrong, but he was super, super, he was a senior that was just a leader that had been around and provided them with a ton of experience.
Lynchburg will play York this weekend, and Cabrini faces Dickinson. We will talk about those matchups in a little bit. I want to talk very briefly about a couple games here. Kyle, why don't you start Illinois Wesleyan 14, Ohio Wesleyan 11.
Might have already touched on this in my rants, but in terms of just the game on the field, Illinois Wesleyan, they just outran Ohio Wesleyan at a certain point. Like, unlike Rhodes last week, Ohio Wesleyan wasn't able to control the tempo by slowing it down. And if you can't do that with Illinois Wesleyan dodged, like, perfect description of this game, right? Ohio Wesleyan tries to slow down the ball, ISOs at attack, shot gets saved. Ball is completely out. Everyone's subbing. A long pole's running it up. Someone's staying back. He dishes long pass to the left wing for an attackman. The attackman does not even look to see where anyone else is. Runs, chains his dodge, splits to his left, rolls back right, low to high goal to seal the game. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, honestly, but was that 15? So great. I believe it was Smith. Yes.
He was a point shy of 100 points as a freshman. He's a sophomore this year. He had 99 points last year.
Just incredible. Like, but the audacity. The sheer audacity to do that when, like, you know you can kill the game if you run the ball out. Nah, I'm a score. Like, and the bench goes nuts. It's crazy. Like, it was a fun, but frustrating. People were like, why are you always talking about Illinois Wesleyan? Because it's fun, man. This was a fun game.
And it's a big game for them too, right? Ohio Wesleyan is a household name for Division III fans. Illinois Wesleyan, in the last few years, we've known them for just putting up a ton of goals, but actually beat, a perennial top 20 team, is an awesome, awesome thing for those guys. So continue to keep out for them. I'm sure we'll continue to talk about them on this podcast. But congrats to those guys on a big win. Let's move forward. WNL, this one's a little bit of a head scratcher. WNL 23, Washington College 3. Dan?
Yeah, man, this was, you know, you talked about Gettysburg coming out flat. I felt really similar about WAC. I just don't know that they ever really came and were ready to – I don't think that they ever came ready for a fight. It just was, you know, kind of dull from the beginning. And WNL did a really good job of sticking with their guys. They made some changes between games, and they just got their group on offense, and it seemed like they were starting to mesh a bit better. Stuart Greenspan had 6 assists and was finding seams. He did a really good job of making sure that anybody who was open got a good pass to their ear.
Yeah, there's not really too much more to say about this one. Washington College was all over the place with their defensive slides. Guys were beating their man, and it's something we had criticized WNL for last week, was not being able to beat their man and draw slides. They were beating their man, and Washington College was not ready to slide almost every single time.
Right, and the week before, Washington WAC was playing zone a lot. And so I'm interested to know if the reason that they were so slow on man is because they were just used to playing a whole bunch of zone defense so far this season.
Yeah, an interesting one for sure. Another one I want to mention, St. Mary's 12, Elizabethtown 10. I'm going to keep coming back to you, Dan, our resident Southerner.
All right, cool. Let's do this thing. Best matchup of the day that I saw between one player and another. Alec Leslie on defense and Jude Brown on offense. They just went
Jude out. Brown, by the way, another player who has terrorized my high school team playing for John Carroll. Once was a high point commit. I didn't know where he was until you mentioned he was on St. Mary's.
Yes, yeah. Very, very skilled, very talented. Does a really good job of getting to his right hand. He dodges with a really good combination of speed, but also not afraid to put his shoulder in. And so after he would make his first move on Leslie, Leslie was right there with him. But then Brown was doing a good job of getting into his body. And Leslie uses his length to his advantage as much as possible. He's a tall kid. He's probably like a 6'3 kid. And Brown just took that away from him by getting into his body. And a lot of times he did a really good job of, you know, stopping that initial dodge. But then when Brown was bailing the feed, he just lost contact and was no longer playing his hands. And so Brown was able to see seams and, you know, survey the field. He ended up with 4 assists.
It's a good one. Another good one. Elizabethtown continues to battle and claw and scratch to get into these games. Coach Brzezinski continues to do a great job. Jason Childs' squad gets the win, 12-10. Let's move up north. Kyle, I know you're happy to hear that. We got two games I want to talk about a little bit. Not too much at length. We need to move on a little bit here. RIT 15, Bates 9. What are your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, RIT kind of had this one in the bag. No immediate stream available, but just going back through everything, you know, Bates scored 5 of their 9 goals in the fourth quarter when the game was already over. Big news for the Cats here. Their best player is Matt Listowa, one of the first team all NESCAC, an amazing player, out with a non-lacrosse injury for this game. I don't know how long he's out, but
it's a huge loss.
As long as he's out, I would not pick Bates to win anything. And that's not a shot at Bates. That's how good Listowa is. He's an incredible player, and he was clearly absent here, and it really affected them. And, you know, RIT, give them openings and they'll feast. You know, like Dawson Tate, 5 goals, 2 assists. Ryan Barnable, 3 goals, 4 assists. You know, 2 guys with 7 points. That's, almost as much as the whole entire other team. So, you know, you can't win when you're giving up possessions to RIT and you're not cashing in and they are scoring on every break. So, you know, RIT, one of the best teams in the nation. I think we still need to watch them, see how they develop. But if offense wins championships, which it's my theory for D3, especially offense wins championships, RIT's in the talk. He's in the conversation.
Yeah. So Kyle, I noticed in the first game against Ohio Wesleyan that Maruna didn't play. Did he play in that second game against Bates?
He did. A little sparingly, like 2 ground balls and a cost turnover. Kind of probably just working his way back, but had a decent game for the Tigers. Again, it's like, it's hard to judge like defensive guys when you're not playing defense a lot. So
yeah,
You know what I mean? Like hard to put that out there. But you know, again, we talked about last week, Quinn Commandant coming back. He was the third leading scorer for them here with a goal and two assists. So, you know, again, the RIT Tigers, they're rolling, man. I want to see a team give them a challenge like sooner rather than later.
Well, they do have a Wednesday game. We're just going to mention these Wednesday games. RIT plays Nazareth. This podcast is going to be coming out Wednesday. They play them Wednesday evening. We have mentioned Dickinson and Elizabethtown multiple times here as well. They battle on Wednesday night. Let's look ahead to a pretty loaded Saturday slate of games. Well, let's pick some games here as well. We haven't been into the picks. We got to talk to our boy, Matt Kinnear, about getting them up online so people can chirp us, specifically me, for picking Lynchburg every week. So let's start with that game, Dan. Me versus you.
Yeah.
We should put something on the table. I don't know what we want. Hat bet. Something like that.
Do a hat bet.
What is it?
What's a hat bet?
Okay. I did this last year. Basically, what you have to do is you need to have a gentleman's bet. Loser, the loser's team, buys a hat from the other school and has to wear it for a week in the office.
Let's say we're not going to buy it. I will let Dan borrow my Lynchburg hat, slash he definitely already has one, and I 100% have like a York snow hat. So we'll just roll with we will post a photo from Inside Lacrosse Twitter, Instagram of either one of us wearing the loser's hat, hat.
We can juice this thing up. We'll go full sweat gear. We'll get everything that we can, as much of the other team's gear as possible. Plenty.
Full sideline kit.
Yeah,
hat, full sideline kit.
When they win this game, Josh Davies is going to be wearing so much green that he's gonna look beautiful in that.
I look good in green. I do look good in green. So, wow. You know, biases aside here, how do you see this one playing out? I know you're going to pick York either way, regardless. What are the matchups? What are the things that intrigue you about this matchup?
Yeah, so, I mean, I touched on it earlier, right? What can York do to keep Kevin Rogers off the box score, right? If they can do that, I think that, you know, Lynchburg's going to struggle. The other guy that they've been able to rely on to generate slides has been Colin Dean. I like York's short stick, so that'll be a good matchup. Watching them go at it is going to be, you know, really fun for 60 minutes, and it's going to have a huge impact on the final score of the game.
How does York do face-off wise? Like, how do you think that breaks down?
I think it'll be really, really close right there. Like, I don't think either team has a guy that's been that dominant, and so whichever team can make it a 50-50 and come up with more tough ground balls in the middle of the field is going to win, not just the game, but the face-off count.
Yeah, I like Lynchburg in a lot of these games. Again, biases aside, is because I feel like they have the piece or pieces everywhere. They have an eraser on defense with Tyler Gallagher, who could take away your team's best attackman. Kevin Rogers, you alluded to, I think is possibly the best player in the country. And on attack, they're really balanced. I know they're still going to continue to get healthy, but with Tramiel Robinson, Nate Schaefer, and a couple other guys mixing in there, like they can pull from deep. They can beat you one-on-one, draw slides. You know, they play a lot of east to west, trying to confuse teams with their slides. And I've been at this Lynchburg-York game in the past, and I know it has given them problems. But at the same time, Coach Childs played for Coach Kadaka. No one is going to be more ready or want to win this game more than he is.
Gosh, yeah, it's like...
You know, you coached this game last year.
Oh, my goodness. This week going into this game, you know, there's just a different feel around the locker room. Everybody's really excited. There's a different buzz that goes into it. And I'm sure it's like that over there, too. Like, those guys are just as competitive. Neither team wants to give an inch in this game. And it stems from their head coaches, two of the most competitive people I know, right?
Yeah, that is for sure. Let's move forward. Another ODAC versus Centennial Conference battle. The Franklin and Marshall Diplomats versus the Washington and Lee Generals. We talked about F&M and their loss to Lynchburg and how they were a little bit helter-skelter, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, whereas W&L just put up 23 goals on Washington College. I like the Generals in this one. Kyle, Devin, do you guys have any thoughts? Kyle or Dan, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, another Southern white and blue team versus another Southern white and blue team. I don't know. It's hard for me to pick. They're all the same to me. I'm going to take F&M because they are better at chirping me than Washington Lee is.
True. They got to take that matters.
I think I'd take W&L. We've criticized them a bunch so far this year. But all of our criticism has been on the offensive side of the ball. And after watching Franklin and Marshall and Lynchburg and seeing that F&M Team D, like, obviously I hope that they've spent a couple weeks here since that game working on those flaws. But, you know, until I see it, I don't believe it.
Let me ask you something. How do you guys feel about teams like being on the podcast and then like all of a sudden the next week just totally adjusting and like putting out a huge result? I feel like,
I don't.
I think like we're helping along like the discourse by kind of like backing teams and putting up analysis, because like D3, like as a whole in the media, doesn't get a lot of that. And I feel like if we're like being like, okay, this team doesn't do this, this team is this, you know, like I said WNL is an ISO team and they dropped 23 goals. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like maybe they could say thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm with you.
Yeah, right? I hope they were listening. That would be pretty cool.
There's no way we would get a lot
of teams hitting us up to talk about them if that was the case. But listen, I won't roll it out. I'm not gonna give ourselves that big of a pat on the back, but I do think we're doing a good job.
They're probably just sitting there talking about how dumb we are because we aren't with them every day at practice to see the other things.
That's ultimate coach speak right there. Let's stay focused here. Move on. We got three more games to talk about. Centennial Conference champs, Ursinus versus CNU. CNU, a hot team right now. They beat Hamden Sydney 10-9 last week. They not upset at this point. Roanoke doubled them up 24-12. A young team, CNU, Ursinus, a little bit more experienced in that they've kind of, you know, they won the conference championship last year. Dan, what do you think?
This one's going to be awesome. Both teams are, like, trending upwards, if that's a thing. Both teams are coming off of wins here. Both teams are undefeated going into this. It's going to be really fun to watch. If I had to pick, I'm going to pick CNU. I think that they are just, like, man, they just play with a different side of passion and energy that right now I have not seen in a while. They're really fun to watch. They have all these young guys that are contributing in major, major ways, and it doesn't feel like they're young. A big decider in this will be if Dylan Rice plays, right? He didn't play against Hampton Sydney. All these W&L and F&M getting that in
those
my
ampersands.
Head. Yeah, those things screwing me up. But with all that said, you know, like, I think that CNU is just going to be able to make a push and play all these young guys. And if they can get Dylan Rice back, who didn't play against Hampton Sydney, that's another story too. But, man, they're just fun to watch. They play a different brand of lacrosse where they're bringing a ton of energy, playing the ball all over the place. You know, it's awesome.
let's wrap this podcast up with a trip up north. Two NESCAC teams. Kyle, your time to shine. Wesleyan versus Bates. We talked about Bates and I don't know how you say this kid's last name. I feel like a million people say it a million different ways. I would say like Chustawa, but it's spelled with a CH, correct?
Yeah, it's like a silent CH.
Yeah.
It's a tough one, but I literally like talked to Coach Lasagna on the sideline last year when I saw them play Amherst and was like, how do you say it? You need to tell me how to say it. And it's Lestala. So,
well, these NESCAC teams are getting going, but Wesleyan Bates is a good one to kind of set the table and get us started.
Yeah, I think it tells a lot about where Wesleyan is, right? I would pick Bates to win it unless Lestala was playing, and I don't think he's going to. But again, you know, kind of stay tuned to that. That's a developing situation. I think with Wesleyan, they're looking to replace a lot of things on offense. They always have a great defense. Always. Because teams hate – no
boy.
One – yes. No one hates – there's a no one – hates playing Wesleyan more than anyone in the NESCAC because they have to play them multiple times a year, especially if they make, you know, the NESCAC tournament. And with Wesleyan, you have to hope they make a mistake for you to score. Like, it's not a defense that lets you adjust, right? Like, as soon as you think you know what they're doing, they change something up and they slide from a different place. And all of a sudden your stick's on the ground. And you're like looking at your coach, like, what happened? You know, like, that's the kind of defense that they play. Again, you know, with Bates only scoring kind of goals in the fourth quarter when the game was clearly over against RIT, not a great way to kick it off. But, you know, I got to pick Wesleyan here, and I want to see, like, how much – not to be like, oh, I want to see how much they can win by. That's, like, really bold and brash and terrible. but I do want to see what the defense does and what the offense kind of looks like after the departure of a bunch of guys last year that kind of led the way in that senior class. So, you know, definitely one of my, that's my game to watch this weekend. I know there's a ton of other ones, but that's, you know, that's where my eyes are going to be.
Yeah. Wesleyan knocked out by Amherst last year in a 16-13 game, I believe in like the third round. Then Subway Tournament. A lot of games to watch this weekend, fellas. I'm pretty excited about it. I am going to be somewhere on a beach or on a boat in Key West this weekend. I'm going for a fellow Lynchburg Hornet alum, Chase Lotes, bachelor party. But I will definitely have the live streams up on my phone, rocking and rolling. We mentioned there's a handful of more games that are also really intriguing. Dickinson Cabrini, another one we didn't talk about. But Kyle alluded to it for a lengthy rant in the beginning. Check out these streams. You know, the more we can watch these games and support these guys, we are going to, you know, continue to invest in those. Everything's on InsideLacrosse.com. We have the live stats rocking and rolling for games. It was so cool for me to be driving up the Jersey Turnpike, stopped at a rest stop, just crushing the refresh button on that Lynchburg-Cabrini game as it was tied throughout the entire third and fourth quarter before the Cavaliers started to pull away. You can get live stats for all of your favorite teams, your favorite games. Make sure you're checking out everything on www.insidelacrosse.com. Dan Kaplan's weekly recap is up as well, kind of previewing the games ahead and talking a little bit about the games that happened before as well. Super in-depth. More. These are basically the text messages I'm getting on Saturday while I'm driving, just in more story form.
I got to screen it before I put it on paper for someone, for everybody.
It's like, it's kind of like Pepe Silvia and Charlie Kelly and Always Sunny. He's just got lines and numbers and streams and whatever. It's a sight for sore eyes. But anyway, make sure you're following everything. We're kind of, you know, pretty active on social media throughout the weekends talking about games. At DKaplan 46, you're welcome. At Josh Davey 5, what is at K Devitt?
No, it's at the Kyle Devitt. Whole
I
name.
That. I was just making sure you knew.
Yeah, it's like, you know, my favorite thing to do is to go on Twitter and have discourse. So come on, let's go. Come at me.
It's good. Keep it rolling and appreciate everyone listening. And we will continue to bring you this podcast every Wednesday. And we will see you next week.